Welcome to a special live edition of Political Rewind on Tuesday, September 27th. We're coming to you from the Midtown Atlanta studios of Georgia Public Broadcasting. Most of you know we're usually here on Wednesday afternoons and Friday afternoons, but the debate last night was such a big event that we felt we had to be here with you today to give our panel of insiders an opportunity to give you their take and to hear what you think about the debate. Before I introduce to you the panel, let me point out a couple of quick things to you. Most important, Trevor Young and Jenny Ament, our producer and senior producer, said, you know, we've pretty well got our voter panel together for the show that we're going to record in a week or so. But after the debate last night, we ought to give people one last chance to tell us if they want to be part of that panel. So we're going to do that. You can call us at 685, this number, I'm sorry, 678-757. I think we've got the number wrong. Is that right, Trevor? 678-757-4472. 678-757-4472. Sorry about that, folks. Leave a message. Tell us why you should be at the debate. I would be lying if I didn't tell you we were looking for a few more people who say they're undecided, really can't make a choice between Clinton and Trump, because we really want to hear how you're arriving at your last moments before actually going and voting. 678-757-4472. We also are going to share with you throughout the show today, Robert Jimison, who is our titan of Twitter, came up with an idea yesterday afternoon, #5word, that's five, the number five, word debate. And he asks that you send us your five words to summarize what you saw last night. We're still open to hearing from more of you, but we got some really wonderful responses, and we'll share those with you as we move forward. All right, let's get to today's panel. We have, as always, Jim Galloway, the political writer for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, with us. You read him on Thursdays and Sundays in the newspaper, and he, of course, oversees Political Insider, the blog that updates you on politics around the clock if you go to ajc.com. Jim, glad to have you here today.
Good to be here.
Patricia Murphy, she is a columnist for The Hill and for Daily Beast, political columnist, and has a, we haven't talked about the experience you've had in Washington, and we ought to do that at some point. The things that give you the insights that you have.
Insights.
Thank you. And Aaron Gulchainen is back with us. He's a political reporter from the AJC. Aaron, a real pleasure to have you as well.
Likewise, Bill.
All right, let's get started. Jim, let's start. I'd like to do a quick go-round. We have some areas of the debate we want to drill down on, but let's give each of you a chance to give us maybe 1 minute on how you would summarize. What's your lead and first couple graphs from last night's debate, Jim?
Okay. Halfway through, I finally realized Hillary Clinton reminds me of George H.W. Bush. Competent, she can express herself well, but she doesn't have the vision thing. She did fine last night. She missed a couple chances to drive the nail home in the coffin, but she did all right. Trump had a really smart beginning. He actually caught me unawares when he was making a very, very good point on federal debt, and then simply wandered off campus, and never really got it back. And when it came to foreign policy at the very end, he just simply went off the rails.
Yeah, I at one point tweeted toward the end, is it just me or is all of the energy gone out of this debate for a while here? And it was primarily on the Trump side. All right, thank you. Patricia, why don't you give us your lead and first couple of graphs?
Sure. For Hillary Clinton, easy breezy. Donald Trump, rough and tumble. He had kind of a rough night last night. I think for her, the fear among Democrats was that she would come out and be a robot and a scold and sort of the mean teacher in the room. And I felt like she had a very nice demeanor. Again, a few missed opportunities for her to hammer Trump, but she almost appeared to be holding back on that. For Donald Trump, this is why it matters to do your homework. He was so obviously unprepared. He just made mistakes that congressional candidates don't make. He never mentioned Benghazi. He did not mention the Supreme Court, which is just a huge motivator for conservatives. He never mentioned the border wall. He never mentioned the basket of deplorables. Just all of these vulnerabilities for Hillary Clinton laying out there and some things that could trigger his own voters. And he just didn't do it. He got so wrapped up in his own head when she was taking all these personal shots at him that I just felt like he got wound around the axle and could not untie himself.
Interesting. Aaron?
I kind of thought it was the tale of two debates, that the first 20 minutes that Trump was just in control, he was in charge, he had good answers to questions.
You give him 20 minutes.
I thought by the time he got through with TPP and some of the economic stuff, I thought he was in control. But then it just sort of like the tide turned, and whether it was because Lester Holt then started going after him on some pointed questions, or it's because Hillary was so good at just... She was like a boxer. She was sticking and moving. She'd stick him just, you know, right under his nose with whether it was, you know, that very rehearsed line that you live in your own reality, you know, and then move back and then just watch him sort of undo himself, you know, with the interruptions and the exaggerations and stuff just got worse and worse and worse. And he just could not get back on track in that last 70 minutes. And she just sort of let him go. But I agree with everyone else, too, that I thought that she missed some opportunities. I thought her very rehearsed answer on stamina was too long and it should have been shorter and jabbier and would have had more impact. I'm not sure trumped up trickle down economics worked.
it's a line it's been used.
Yeah. It was just an opener. It was just an opener.
That's right. All right. I'll tell you what, that's good. Great opening round from all of you. Let's drill down a bit. Everybody seems to agree that the beginning of the debate, Trump came out trying to put her on the defensive and, of course, going after her on the basis of what he believes she has failed to do. Concerns about the economy was an early strong point. Let's listen to a little of what happened.
And look at Ohio and look at all of these places where so many of their jobs and their companies are just leaving. They're gone. And Hillary, I just ask you this. You've been doing this for 30 years. Why are you just thinking about these solutions right now? For 30 years, you've been doing it, and now you're just starting to think of solutions.
Well, actually,
I will bring back jobs. You can't bring back jobs.
Well, actually, I have thought about this quite a bit.
Yeah, for 30 years.
I have, not quite that long. I think my husband did a pretty good job in the 1990s. I think a lot about what worked and how we can make it work again.
Well, he approved NAFTA.
3 million new jobs,
he approved NAFTA,
balanced budget.
Which is the single worst trade deal ever approved in this country.
Incomes went up for everybody. Manufacturing jobs went up also in the 1990s, if we're actually going to look at the facts.
All right. Aaron, Patricia, Jim, how did that exchange go for any of you? Somebody jump in.
That was sort of, to me, like the point where I thought Trump was doing best, when he's honing in on Ohio, on Pennsylvania, on voters, on issues that matter to those two very key battleground states. I thought he started to lose it there at the end when he kept interrupting her about NAFTA, and that's sort of where I think he began his downfall. But that was a good point from him. And the 30-year political insider kind of thing, he never came back to those things about focusing on jobs and on those states.
Yeah, Jim?
Now, I don't know whether it came before or after that exchange, but he was making the point about the federal deficit and was saying that, you know, it's one thing to have a deficit of $16 trillion, but then to have $16 trillion in debt and yet to have your infrastructure still lagging behind. He was making actually an excellent point there.
Yeah, and I thought, yes, and he was able to talk in such a way she couldn't get through. He was dominating it without being a bully at that point. That changed a little bit. I'm here with Aaron Gould-Shinen and Jim Galloway of the AJC and Patricia Murphy of The Hill and The Daily Beast. Patricia, I'm going to come to you in a second, but let's share a couple of these five-word debate tweets that you all sent to us out there. Aaron, I think you really came up with a pretty good one. You sent one to us. What was yours?
Mine was, man, I need a drink.
Right. Biz Communicator says, you can't ruffle me, Donald. LaDawn Jones says, at LaDawn Jones, a bigly waste of time. Polls Country Doc says, not hearing any convincing arguments. We'll share some more of those. You can join us at Politics GPB. Use the hashtag five at the number five word debate. We'd love to read what you have to say. Patricia, before the we took a few minutes on our pledge drive, we talked about the exchange between Clinton and Trump on the economy, jobs. A lot of people agree that that was one of the best moments for Trump. How do you think this isn't? How does this land with Georgia voters at this point? Is it move the needle at all, or is everything set here?
Well, I certainly don't think things are set here in Georgia at all. I think that when Donald Trump does, as he says, is his aspiration to be the voice for the voiceless of Americans who feel like they don't have a voice in Washington, particularly blue-collar workers, working men and women, I think that's when he is at his best, and I think that's when it resonates the best in Georgia. And when you talk about, he talked a bit about manufacturing. Even, you know, Georgia used to have a very strong manufacturing base out in the rural areas, and hurt very much by NAFTA. And so I go to rallies, Donald Trump rallies in the South, and that still really resonates. So many of those communities are hurt. Those voters feel like they don't have anybody on their side except Donald Trump. So that's when he's winning. Unfortunately, Donald Trump maintained that message for about 30 seconds last night. And then he got way into the weeds in personal attacks on just a whole host of Hollywood celebrities. You know, it's just this mind-boggling departure from what he really should be saying and could have won that debate with that.
Jim, we do see an uptick in manufacturing in Georgia, right? I mean, it is coming back. There's not what it was, but there is some. You know, is that message resonating? If people think that manufacturing,
it's not resonating against among Republican leadership, because it's a wholly different kind of manufacturing that we have now. I mean, what Patricia was talking, was the old textile mill system.
Yeah.
Low-paying jobs, low education jobs that went away. We're not trying to get those jobs back. Instead, we're chasing car manufacturers.
Right.
And what we're doing is we're assembling them here, but we're importing the parts. So trade is absolutely important. I'll tell you what, one thing I'd like to hear from Aaron on is he put up a nice post today from Newt Gingrich that kind of shows how the GOP is struggling to say nice things about him. The phrase adequately competent.
Aaron?
So you had to set that up. So last night, as we're getting ready for the debate, Newt had tweeted a series of things about what he expected to happen last night. And the last one was that Trump would prove himself to be adequately competent and win the debate and reassure Americans. That's not a very high bar. But obviously, apparently Newt post-debate believed that Trump exceeded that because he went on Sean Hannity's show on Fox News and called it an epic historic win for Donald Trump.
Yeah, and you know, because most of the reviews about Trump's performance were fairly negative, it also calls into question Kellyanne Conway, his campaign manager, saying, Patricia, he's the Babe Ruth of debating.
Yes, well, she did set expectations a little high with that one, but I mean, that's her job. Go out there, you know, say you work for a great guy, say you're a great guy, did a great job, and Kellyanne Conway, I mean, with the exception of the Babe Ruth line, I think has been just a gift from the gods to this campaign. She has really, I think, brought discipline to Donald Trump and his campaign where it was missing. So he's only at this point, I think, in large part because of her efforts.
Let's listen to a moment, and she had several of them, but let's listen to one of the biggest moments that Hillary Clinton had. And that's when Lester Holt, the moderator, turned to conversation about race. Trump immediately went to Law and Order. Holt came back by talking about Trump and the birther movement. Let's listen to a little of this.
The birth certificate was produced in 2011. You continued to tell the story and question the president's legitimacy in 2012, 13, 14, 15,
yeah,
as recently as January. So the question is, what changed your mind?
Well, nobody was pressing it. Nobody was caring much about it. I figured you'd ask the question tonight, of course. And I think I did a great job and a great service, not only for the country, but even for the president, in getting him to produce his birth certificate.
Secretary Clinton.
Clearly, as Donald just admitted, he knew he was going to stand on this debate stage and Lester Holt was going to be asking us questions. So he tried to put the whole racist birther lie to bed. But it can't be dismissed that easily.
So, Jim, let me get your take on something here. It would be easy for people to imagine that when a presidential candidate stands up to debate, that what they're hoping to do is persuade the entire country that we should all vote for them. But that isn't how candidates approach a debate. They recognize there are certain voting blocks they need to win over. I think Hillary Clinton did some of that, and we'll talk about it in a minute. I don't know if she won them, but she was targeting. Right. I mean, we know that Trump needs African-American voters, or he hopes he can encourage them to vote for him. And yet he talked law and order, not about race relations, and he didn't put the birther matter to rest.
No, I would disagree slightly. I mean, he doesn't need African-American voters as much as he needs college-educated white women. And I think that's who those remarks were aimed at. But here's the thing. He 2 weeks ago, he made that declaration that Obama, it was indeed born in the United States. He hasn't said anything on it yet. He knew the fastball was coming. Here comes the fastball, and he whiffs. There's no attempt to move that explanation beyond what he said 2 weeks ago. And that's one thing I just cannot understand, is if maybe it goes to lack of preparation. But he knew that question was coming. He knew that the moderator was going to ask it.
All right, more tweets coming in about the debate. Sam Burnham at C_SamBurnham says, "Why I'm voting Gary Johnson," Pack at Pax Bobro says, "I am listening to Hillary." Interesting. Our friend and panelist Julianne Thompson had a couple of tweets that I think will spark some conversation here. One of them is, Julianne said, "America learned nothing new tonight." We can talk about that. But Aaron, she also tweeted, "Big loser tonight, Lester Holt." My question is, was there any way Lester Holt could be a winner last night?
I don't think there is. No, not at all. And I honestly thought that he did a pretty good job. And it was designed, obviously, to give them some space to talk without interruption from the moderator. I do think at some point she should have gotten a question about Justice Department immunity to some of her aides that came out in the last week or so. He relied on Trump. Trump was the only one who brought up the question about the emails. It would have been interesting, I think, to have had a pointed question to her to dive a little bit deeper into what all those issues meant. And then if it's not on the issues base and what it means to her campaign and that sort of thing.
Jim, what about this? I mean, can a moderator possibly, in this charged political environment, the partisanship that we have today, can a moderator ever satisfy all people?
And in this case, I think what they ended up doing was fighting the last battle. You remember Matt Lauer in the back-to-back appearances on that aircraft carrier in New York with Trump and Hillary. He was criticized very, very much for not following up Donald Trump on the issue of his statement that he was opposed to the war in Iraq, the moderator pursued that line of questioning, but Aaron's right. He didn't go after Hillary in the same fashion, and that was a missed opportunity.
Patricia, we can certainly continue to drill down on performance of each, but I think the most important question today is whether the needle was moved by this, how voters are reacting. And I want to just quickly share with you a tweet we just got at PoliticsGPB from Marie, who tweets at KDPW. "It was a debate between two serial liars and opportunists with no record of helping average Americans." What about all of this? Did either of them help improve the negative impressions that Americans have of both of them?
You know, we won't know that for several days when there's some real polling that gets into the field and not snap polls. So we're not going to know that. And even then, you still don't know. Sometimes we can look back on past presidential cycles and it seemed like, you know, some people thought Al Gore won the campaign and then he didn't win the election. I mean, sorry, won the debates and then didn't win the election. So, you know, will it really matter in the end? It's hard to say. I know one thing that Hillary Clinton did do last night was to assure members of her own party that they should get on board. I talked to multiple Democratic sources yesterday who were wistful about, wouldn't it be great if Joe Biden was going to debate tonight? They were so worried about how poorly she's been doing and the poor judgment she's shown, especially with her health issues, that they didn't know that Hillary Clinton was going to be able to come forward and do her very best. They were just so anxious about it. So she settled down the Democrats and I think built the enthusiasm back with those people that she really did need to. If you're an undecided voter, I don't know that you saw a whole lot. Or if you're, you know, the people who are like, oh, I hate them both. I don't know that you saw anything up there that would warm you to one or the other. You might hate one a little more than you did the day before.
It does strike me, Jim, that whether voters were persuaded one way or the other last night, it did feel, and this morning, if any of you have had an opportunity to see the video of the news conference Hillary Clinton did on her plane, she came to the back of the plane and talked to reporters traveling with her. The debate did seem to rejuvenate her. She has felt, to me at least, personally, like somebody who has not been closing well, who has been, of course, she was sick, but her energy has been low, whether she's sick or not. She's been off her game in many ways, not behaving with the smarts that many people think she has. And Jim, it did feel like listening to her this morning, it has at least put her in a better place to finish this out.
It did. And you know, this is one of those areas where you watch what a candidate does rather than what they say. And I'll tell you, the thing that struck me most was that immediately after that debate, Donald Trump headed for the spin room.
Yeah.
He wanted new video out there to start covering up what had happened in the 90 minutes previous. I thought that was important.
Well, you know what? Your colleague Greg Bluestein was in the spin room. We talked to him earlier this morning. Let's just listen to a little of what he said about the spin room and Trump's appearance there.
There was a huge rush to Trump, and it was, at least for that 10 minutes, was the big moment of the post-debate, because I think he recognized that it was a rough night that did not go exactly how he wanted it to go, and he thought that he could command a little bit more attention in that final stretch by walking through the spin room.
Who were the Georgia surrogates?
We had Senator David Perdue, who called it a grand slam home run for Trump. We had Ashley Bell, who is the RNC's sort of top African-American liaison, and Jack Kingston, who's really become sort of a go-to for the Trump campaign on TV. He was there. Oh, and Bruce Lavelle, the Dunwoody jeweler, who is also head of Trump's National Diversity Coalition.
Aaron, that's Greg Bluestein, your colleague who was in the spin room last night. We do have a bunch of Georgian Republican officials. David Perdue, one of the first guys, first members of the United States Senate to jump on the Trump campaign. He's still there with him. And Jack Kingston, who most people used to think was a somewhat slightly more moderate Republican, sort of, has jumped in both feet to Trump, too.
Yeah, I think, but Jack learned his lesson in that primary campaign with David Perdue, didn't he? But he's definitely been whole hog for Trump since then. And Tom Price last night, too, was out with a statement that was very, very positive toward Donald Trump. I'm not sure what we'd have expected otherwise, you know, unless it was just a complete collapse. But I did notice last night that after the debate, Rudy Giuliani, the former mayor of New York, who's a big Trump surrogate, said that it was not Trump's best performance, which I thought was a rare moment of candor.
Patricia, a very important moment, and we're going to start this now and then take it up after our next break. Hillary Clinton really went after him about the comments he's made about women, Latina woman who was the Miss Universe winner, who he called Miss Piggy, had made really disparaging comments about. And then he said, well, I could go after you too, essentially. He was going to bring up Monica Lewinsky, the other foibles of Bill Clinton. And now it appears he may go there in this next debate.
Right. Although we have to acknowledge that he did go there last night by saying, well, I could say something really awful, but I'm not going to because I'm a real gentleman. You know, so he did go there last night, and now he is going to hold us all in suspense for the next 10 days, I guess, until the next presidential campaign. I don't think he should go there, I have to say. When they were just dangling the possibility that Jennifer Flowers might be in the front row, to me, that just, if you're looking to win over married women, I don't think you dangle a two-decade-old mistress in front of the woman who was cheated on for 12 years as part of your campaign. It just doesn't feel right. It doesn't look right. It's relative. It's cruel. I think he needs to be very careful the way he handles Hillary Clinton and her husband.
I want to come back to that. We're getting tweets from you, a lot of them, our friend Todd Rehm said he was listening to us discuss last night, and he crossed out dumpster fire and put in debate instead. We have tweets from the middle for America. I would vote for Michael Dukakis, basically anybody, even W, to not vote for Trump. Tim Eccles, who listens to this show regularly, says his five-word debate, he cheated, is clash, poorly designed, poorly moderated, uninformative, energy policy less. I think that's cheating just a little bit, Tim, but we love your support. Jim Galloway, what do we make of Trump raising the specter of talking at some point down the line about Bill Clinton's infidelities and whether or not this has the potential to help him win the general election? Clinton was clearly prepared. She was prepared for everything else. I don't think there's any question she had an answer if he had raised it last night. Don't you think that?
Yeah, I think what we're seeing is a debate within the Trump campaign. I mean, when, as Patricia said, Trump dangled the prospect of Jennifer Flowers out there, and then of course immediately Pence and Kellyanne Conway said no, we're not going to do that. He raises it again at the end of the debate. I think a lot of this is rehearsed, and I think we're seeing the suspense. Patricia's right, we're seeing the suspense model kick in here. But I would also say that it's also, you also see it on the Clinton side. Clinton was very rushed in the very end of the campaign, of the debate, to bring up that the 1996 Miss Universe who Trump was so mean to. And now this morning we know why she did that. She was in such a rush because they've got a Spanish language video out described with incredible detail with the woman, and they put her on a press conference.
Yeah,
call
she did a press
morning.
conference call mostly in Spanish to detail what Hillary Clinton's accusations were.
That was not accidental.
Right. Clearly, that's right. Aaron, you've been watching the Clinton campaign. What do you see them doing here in the weeks in this time between the two debates? Do they really think that they can turn this into a purple state? Or is that all just talk to try to get Trump's people ruffled about Georgia?
Man, I tell you, that is a difficult question to answer because it's difficult to measure what constitutes us being a purple state in the minds of the campaign, right? They've put more than $100,000 in cash here. They've put people here. The Clinton campaign and the State Democratic Party are essentially merging operations and acting as one. They both have access to each other's data. Tim Kaine was here all day on Sunday, did one public event and raised money. But we haven't seen that they've spent any money on television advertising here yet.
And Hillary Clinton herself hasn't been here.
And Hillary Clinton herself hasn't been there. Those are two pretty important things to know if you're a battleground state.
Jim, you want to jump in?
Yeah, I think that the possibility that Georgia's a battleground state just shrank considerably last week when Jim Barksdale, the Democratic candidate for U.S. Senate, fired his campaign manager Dave Hoffman, brought in a Bernie Sanders contact. When you do that so 6 weeks out, I think you're really struggling, and without that dynamic of a presidential / statewide race, I don't think it's attractive for
you. Yeah, Patricia, you're nodding. I mean, I've said from the start that I thought it was a pipe dream and an invention of the national media that Georgia might in fact be a purple state. It doesn't appear to be headed that way, does it?
Well, it sure doesn't feel like it. Although some AJC polling is, you know, leads us to always question our instincts on that. But when you are looking at spending finite resources and you're choosing between North Carolina and Georgia, North Carolina has a big governor's race, a very competitive Senate race, and the presidential campaign. And then Georgia has just the maybe it's competitive, maybe it's not presidential campaign. And to Jim's point, the Barksdale campaign, I mean, speaking of dumpster fires, is just sort of dissolving into nothing at this point. Democrats aren't going to spend money on a unified ticket, not real money, not seven-figure money. That means it's really a competitive state. So anything could happen, but
I'd be fascinated to
pick your target.
Sorry, to be in some of those Clinton campaign rooms in Brooklyn about two or three weeks ago or even a month ago when it looked like Georgia might actually be going that way. She was dominating the race, and if they wanted to expand the map and really make a statement win, then I would have thought maybe we would start being really in play. They'd have put those kinds of resources here. But the last 2 to 3 weeks have been so, you know, dreadful for her, and the race has tightened so dramatically. She's back to defending Ohio, Pennsylvania, Colorado, Iowa. And on and on. So, yeah, I think I agree with Patricia at that point.
Jim, I got time for a quick comment from you. There was sort of a uniform feeling, even among conservatives last night, that Trump lost to Clinton. Do we think we're going to see a bump in the polls for Hillary Clinton as a result of last night? And if so, how long does it take for the fuse to ignite?
You know, I'm hesitant to say that you're going to see a bump in the polls of this. I think you may see it in specific states like Colorado, and quite frankly, I think it's going to depend on social media, how these little clips get played in this state or that state.
Right.
I don't see it. This race is so polarized. I don't see it having a huge impact.
Well, one of the questions becomes, Patricia, and again, very quickly from you, if I could. That there's this, there were people who suggested last night that two things could be happening here. One, voters who tended to think that Clinton might be their candidate, but were put off by a lot of her baggage, might have last night arrived at the point where they said, oh my gosh, we don't have a choice. We've got to go for her. And that could help lift her chances. And then some of the people who were looking at Libertarian Gary Johnson, or maybe even Jill Stein, might say, no, we do have a binary choice.
Well, it kind of feels like if you are somebody looking for somebody besides the two major candidates, you're still on the Titanic and the deck chairs are still, you can still sit on the deck chairs. But as time goes by, the water gets high, you got to pick a life raft, and Gary Johnson ain't
He's
it.
Not it. All right, we are completely out of time for today's show. Patricia Murphy, Aaron Gould Shinen, Jim Galloway, thank you. I do have enough time to point out we mentioned Johnny Isakson. Jim, Johnny will be here with us on Friday to talk about his Senate race. We look forward to that show. And that's at 3, and we're back tomorrow at 2 with our regular Political Rewind. I'm Bill Nigut. Thanks for being with us.